Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So all of the, it just seems like every day some new bit of information, another shoe falls off the centipede, more and more. Well, the more we learn about the administration, the more we were right about them all along. Corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. And the story over the weekend, this is one of those bizarre moments. For those who follow Tom Arnold on Twitter, evidently Tom Arnold was attacked by MGM television chairman Mark Burnett. Evidently, Burnett has the tapes of Trump from The Apprentice. Arnold has been saying, hey, release the tapes. We want to see all of Trump unvarnished, which we should have been asking for in 2015 and 2016, by the way. But evidently, there's potential that someone already has them. But evidently, over the weekend, Burnett, who I guess while living in the UK was part of the UK's special forces, attacked Arnold, choking him. There was a big dust-up, and I guess Arnold has filed charges in West LA. The plot just thickens. But at the end of it, could it be that, well, the tapes, could we find out more? And the reality is, will the Republican Party, as corrupt as they've become, will they do anything about it? And again, I don't have any faith in them, which is why I say we need to be electing Democrats right now in every office across this country to hold Republicans accountable and to, well, clean up the mess and the stink that they've created. And here to share some thoughts, I've asked Brett Pransky to come talk with us. He's a Democratic candidate for state representative in Ohio's 77th House District. Brett, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So am I getting this right, that these tapes could be out there?
Well, from what I understand, I've been speaking to a few different people about it, and I don't want to, pretend to have sources above my pay grade or anything. But the story seems to be that during that scuffle that you mentioned, in your intro a minute ago, the language being used was very specific, and it was about a certain person who had these tapes, who supposedly had these tapes. And that person is Ronan Farrow from The New Yorker. Now, if that is true, and again, we're still in the land of speculation here, but if that is true, that's probably about the worst possible circumstance the administration could be in. Because if you're not familiar with Ronan Farrow's work, go back to the Harvey Weinstein case. Most recently, Les Moonves at CBS was a target of one of his stories and so on. Basically, if you know that Ronan Farrow is writing about you, you're going to have a bad day.
Right.
Unless
you're Donald Trump. Unless you're Donald Trump. Because, look, I don't know that there's anything on those tapes that would actually get his supporters to turn against him.
Well, that's true. And again, we are still in the land of speculation. These things have a tendency to move from speculation to at least some form of confirmation. Now, I will reference a tweet that Ronan Farrow put up today. He actually retweeted one, something from July, basically about speculation, in which he said that he does not comment about stories he has not yet published.
Right.
Which was the basic message, which again is not a denial either. And given the amount of attention these tapes would get, if you don't have them and you issue a kind of half-hearted or non-denial as he did, you're going to get a lot of attention.
A lot of blowback.
It seems to be that there must be something. Now, we don't know. We don't know what. We don't know how much. We don't know how many. And we have no idea what would be on these things if he does have them. So there's still so much out there that is just pure speculation that we can't really say, oh, this is it, or this is what we've been waiting for. And I know a lot of people, kind of want to go there, especially people who have been really, fighting the good fight for some time now. And we got to be careful not to, not to treat it as fact when it is not, at least it's not yet.
And you don't want to overhype it. I mean, to me, the interesting part of it would be if it is truly Trump unvarnished, if it's truly him, we should put these on pay-per-view. I mean, I know I'm a big pay-per-view fan, but this is maybe how we solve the national debt. I would pay to see it.
Yeah, I mean, our evidence of Trump unvarnished, it pretty much tells us that, whatever is on these tapes, it's going to be awful. you know, and chances are it's going to be one of a few different brands of awful, but it's going to be the kind of thing that is going to make us, you know, kind of back up in shock, you know? And so
really, do you think we're capable of now at this juncture, you know, almost a year and a half, almost 2 years of this, do you think we're capable of shock and capable of backing up anymore?
Yeah, we're going to need some kind of new medical terminology for shock fatigue or something like that, because we have seen so much every day is a new story that would have ended pretty much any administration before this one, you know? And yet it just keeps happening and happening and happening. It's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. You just can't turn your eyes away from it, but yet you're horrified at the same time. So it's really a difficult thing to manage every day. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are feeling real anxiety about it.
Yeah, I know. And look, it can consume you if you let it. And that's right. One of those things that I say, you know, you need to take a break every once in a while and then come back to it. Because here's the thing. I can't imagine there being anything worse on these tapes than grabbing her by the you-know-what in the Access Hollywood tapes. I can't imagine it gets any worse than that. Other than, you know, he said the N-word. You know, right. That's got to be part of it. And probably other things as well. And the hope is that, you know, people go, well, you know, okay, now we see him for who he is. But, you know, there are those of us who, well, we see him that way already.
Right. Well, I think that's kind of where we're at now. I mean, there is a percentage of the population now that we call Trump's base, and you know, we've labeled them in all kinds of different ways. And but then what happens is there has to be a thing. There has to be something that finally cracks that final kind of level of support that he's got out there. Because yeah. I'm telling you, I'm running a campaign now. I'm out knocking doors every day. There's not a whole lot of people out there, you know, who are that, you know, if that 30% exists, I'm not seeing them. And I live in a pretty deep red district. So, you know, I think folks are really beginning to kind of turn away from this and, you know, starting to be ashamed of the administration, their policies and what they're doing and just how they're behaving on a daily basis.
So while you're out there knocking on doors, because I've had, you know, recently a number of conversations with conservatives, with, you know, people who voted for Trump and are going, well, you know, the discourse is a little too extreme. We're destroying all of the norms. And there are a lot of folks, you know, on both sides of the aisle who don't know if we can go back to an era of good governance, an era of bipartisan government.
Right. I mean, one thing that I can that I found out, one from being out on doors talking to, you know, talking to voters, and again, I knock on all kinds of doors. When you're running in my area, you can't just talk to your base. You can't just talk to Democrats. You got to get out and talk to everybody. So what I'm seeing is an environment in which everyone, regardless of party, regardless of affiliation, they're listening and they're open to the conversation. So the idea that we are, you know, that we are this divided, I think is more a media thing than it is a reality. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are tired. There's a lot of people out there who do still vote in kind of a tribal way where they're just going to back their team no matter what. But it's not nearly as much as I thought it would be, you know. And on the other hand, you know, there have been times when I've, you know, I've been in the room with legislators on both sides of the aisle too. And I find that even in those circles, people are more open to real conversation. They're just not allowed to talk about it in public.
No, and that's
so they get in front of the camera and they play their role.
Yep.
And then they turn into adults when it's just, you know, when it's just them in the room. I think if we, you know, if we can kind of stamp down the appetite we have for the bitterness, then I think we can go back to a point where the two sides can work together and make things happen.
Yeah, I've made the argument that I think CNN was C-SPAN was probably the worst thing that ever came up, to where you get into watching the sausage being made, so to speak, that you see the speeches on the floor and those become now those are our little, you know, our little mini commercials instead of, you know, true legislative, you know, arguments. And, you know, I don't know if you'll agree, but it's one of those moments where you go, you know, when everything is on camera and you can do, you know, none of the backroom wheeling and dealing that has given people the cover to be able to work across the aisle and get things actually done, you know, like pave roads and build bridges and right. fund education and healthcare. And you can go down the list of all the things that have become political issues that you're right. The average person doesn't care which side of the aisle it's on.
Yeah, the average person cares about their wallet, you know, and cares about how their wallet is doing week to week and day to day. And, you know, and we do have this kind of, you know, 24-hour news cycle. Everything's on camera. You know, everybody is always on stage at one point or another. I mean, we saw it even during the Kavanaugh hearings. And I thought, you know, the Democrats in those hearings asked the right questions and did the right things. But you knew who was running for president. I mean, you knew it, you know, by listening to them. There were some people who were not only asking questions, but were also performing at the same time. And not that I would fault them for that necessarily, especially the folks who are going to run. But we are constantly aware of being on camera, of being on stage, that, you know, that our next job or our next goal or whatever might hinge on what we're doing right now. So we have to get it right and so on. So, and I think that that takes some options away from us in terms of working together.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're right in that. And look, you know, I look at Cory Booker, and I'm a little uncomfortable with the breaking of the rules, just because when we start down that path, it only gets worse.
Right, right. And then, you know, for example, these hearings that we're having now about Judge Kavanaugh, you used to need 60 votes.
Right,
you had to work together in order to put a judge on the bench, and you had to concede something to the other side. But now we've changed those rules. So now what's happening next is some other people are breaking some other rules, because some of the things that used to, you know, govern this system and force a little more bipartisan approach are now no longer exist. So now we have to look at other norms. Okay, do these have to be the next ones to go? And, you know, I think that's a bad thing, but I think we need to trace it all the way back to the source.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's when all of these walls start breaking down, you have rules for a reason. There things get done in a certain way for a reason. And, you know, it's like the whole deregulation argument. Let's just tear it apart and let the free market decide. Let it be the wild, wild west. Well, the wild, wild west wasn't that great.
Right. Yeah. And total deregulation will get you some pretty cloudy air, some bad water, and a whole lot of dead people. I mean, at some point, we have to find a balance. We can't just stay in our partisan corners. Everything can't be a binary argument. You know what I mean? It can't be all of one or all of the other. If you can't find some way to knock down barriers and meet in the middle, and this is probably where our government is breaking down more than anywhere else. If you can't find an accommodation between two sides who disagree, well, then you need to find another job.
Yeah.
You know, because we have to find a way to do this. And if I think that's a good reason to vote folks out, you know, just for that reason, just the inability to work with each other, the inability to, you know, to find compromise and reasonable compromise.
Now, you know, we've talked a number of times, and I like you. I think you'll be a great state representative, because you have this kind of thoughtfulness and this kind of this drive to want to actually get things done and make people's lives better, which, again, is where I think Democrats generally find themselves. They're willing to compromise a lot more than Republicans are, because Republicans have homogenized themselves. They've pushed out any moderating forces within their party, and they've now become the party of extreme, and, well, not just extreme, but of corruption. I mean, every day there seems to be like a new scandal coming out of this administration that the Republican Party and the Congress will not do anything about.
Right. And you'll find that you know, that tends to trail all the way down into the states, too. We get the same number of corruption stories here in our state and local politics that we get in, you know, in our national politics. They just don't get as much attention because, you know, they're just at the state level. But I mean, we had a Speaker of the House resign in a corruption scandal. He's being investigated by the FBI. He most likely in the fall going to be replaced by a guy who lost the same job 15 years ago, also chased out on corruption charges. It's getting ridiculous. And we have to do something about it. So it's a matter of, and even those who aren't necessarily wholly corrupt are still profiting from the system. You know, the big money systems and things like that, especially down here at the state level. I mean, you know, my opposition will outspend me 10-1, and it'll all be outside special interest money. And there's nothing we can do about that. You know, and it's getting pretty ridiculous, to be honest with you.
And this is why I think a lot of people turn away from the whole system. They're all corrupt. They're all crooks. They're all no good. And even you, Brett, and I love you. I think you'd be a great representative. Even you, oh, you're corrupt. Why would you want to be involved in this cesspool? And it's just that broad brush blanket kind of assumption that everyone's corrupt and there's no hope for the system, which I'll tell you, you know, as you know, especially on Constitution Day, is scary to me because, you know, you look at, I read something the other day, the average constitution around the world lasts about 12 years. Somehow ours has lasted more than 200. And I fear, you know, we continue down this path, not many more.
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea that, and sometimes I think it's just the easy way out. So we see corruption and we just decide to broad brush the entire system. And I've had this happen to me a number of times. I'm a first time candidate. You know, I'm a first time candidate juggling a campaign plus a day job plus two kids at home and the whole nine yards. And my award, if I win, is to take a pay cut. You know what I mean? So it's not the type of situation where this is going to be a stepping stone and something like that, where you could potentially accuse me of doing anything other than just simply wanting to serve. But people are so tired of the entire system. It doesn't matter what role you play in it. Even if you are a first-time candidate who spends most of his time in the classroom, you know, you're still painted with the same broad brush. I'm not even technically a politician yet. I haven't been elected to anything. I'm still just a candidate, you know. Now, after November 6th, I plan on being a politician for at least a couple of years and hopefully doing a good job for the voters. But as of now, I'm just some guy from the neighborhood who's got a bit of an education and is willing to go out there and help people. And it's really hard to convince my friends and neighbors that that is exactly what I'm there to do. There's a inherent suspicion of everyone, regardless of party, regardless of affiliation, that you must be corrupt, because you want to be a part of the system. And no, I want to change this system, you know, because I'm just tired of it. No. I've seen it. I've seen it operate, and I'm just tired of it. You know, some people in 2016, they ran away. They said, that's it. I'm never going to vote again. I'm tired of it. I can't handle this anymore. Everyone is too corrupt. And some people, and you're seeing it all over the country, they ran towards it. You know, they ran towards the trouble. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a first-time candidate. I'm going to run in a race where someone like me has never won before, you know. And all over the country, we're seeing these stories. First-time candidates, more women than we've ever had, you know, running in these races. There are wonderfully, you know, historic things going on right now from people who just want to serve. And I just hope that the voters out there give them a chance to do it.
And I hope they show up. I mean, and, you know, I look at, you know, everything this administration has done. And look, you know, I've had people who say, well, you know, he's done a couple of things that you agree with. And that's true. There are a couple of things that Trump has done that I actually agree with, but very few. And, right. You know, I give credit where credit is due. You know, I attacked Obama when he deserved it. And I've given credit to Trump where he deserves it. And again, like I said, not a lot of times. But I think the scandal, I think the attack on our democracy, I think these Supreme Court justices that he's nominated, I think this is all destructive for us.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when you think about it, especially, and, you know, not to just go full partisan and attack my opposition, but so much of this is happening on the GOP side of things. I mean, when you look at the changes that have happened in the Republican Party, I heard someone tell me the other day, it was actually in reference to John McCain. They said we just buried the last Republican, you know, and it was kind of stunning. But I had a really hard time arguing with that. You know, here's someone who reached across the aisle who I didn't always agree with, but who always, you know, did his best to serve. We all, you know, we had different ideas, but the same goal. I can't find that in too many places in the current system. People, you know, people on the other side of the aisle who I really truly believe want the best for people, you know, it's all about money and it's all about advancing and it's all about seizing power and so on. These are horrible, horrible things that we have to fight against. I don't necessarily want to fight against these things. I want to ask the people for a job and then reach across the aisle and do as much good work as I can. But
don't you have to fight against those things? I mean, at the end of the day, don't you have to fight against the idea that we need to give more tax cuts to the very wealthy and take food out of the mouths of children to do it?
Yeah. And not only that, but the influences get a lot worse than that. I mean, when you look at the folks on the right, kind of what the GOP platform has been whittled down to in the last 20, 30 years, they basically just have three things that you have to be able to say out loud to be a Republican. You have to say the right thing about guns. You have to say the right thing. You have to be pro-life, and you have to say the right thing about religion. And if you say those three things, you're allowed to be a member of the party, and you can be absolutely vile in between. That's why, for example, in the Illinois 6 right now, where the Republicans are running a full-on Nazi,
yeah,
a swastika-wearing Nazi. You know, Tim Kaine's opponent in Virginia, again, some serious Nazi troubles. There are some vile, vile people running under the GOP side of things. And when you look at their platform and what they stand for, there's nothing in there that forbids it. So it's just of course these people are showing up, you know, as Republicans. There's nothing in the platform that forbids them. But you come over to the Democratic side of things, and it's one of the first things we want equality. We're for equality for everyone. So I'm sorry, if you're a vile racist, you're not allowed. The other side should have that same provision, but apparently they don't, because these guys keep popping up. And there's several of them in the administration.
Well, I mean, come on. Have you followed Stephen? Have you followed Steve King? I mean, have you followed a lot of the Lou Barlotta? Have you followed a lot of these congressmen and these Republicans over the years who have just said, you know, along the lines of a lot of the vile stuff that you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, Steve King in particular is just a horrible human being. And I had the pleasure of meeting his opponent, J.D. Scholten, who's going to win that race, by the way. J.D. is an interesting, engaging candidate, high-energy guy. I mean, he's going to win that race. It's going to be improbable, and the people are going to be shocked about it on Election Day. But I'm telling you right now, J.D. Scholten's going to win that race.
As he should. I mean, come on. I mean, King is he's an abomination.
Right. I mean, it's stunning that people who hold these views and openly hold these views – I mean, it's not that I'm stunned that we vote them in the office. I'm stunned that we don't run them out on a rail. I mean, it really does shock me when I see and go down the list. Look at the Roy Moores, the Joe Arpaios, the Jim Jordans, you know, Stephen Miller, you know, as a mouthpiece in the White House. These are vile people, you know what I mean, with some really openly racist views that they don't mind, you know, sharing with anyone who will listen. And they get enough support to win. I mean, it's just stunning. I don't know how it keeps happening, because I know even if, let's just say Trump's base is 30%. Let's say it's a solid 30%. That's not enough to win. Where are these people in the middle? All right. Who, when, you know, when a Nazi runs in the Illinois 6, say, you know what? I know he's a Nazi, but I just can't vote Democrat. Who are these people?
But see, you know? I've met them. I mean, well, look at the picture of the two guys who would vote for a Russian before voting for a Democrat.
That happened in my backyard. That happened when Trump was in Ohio. I think it was better Russian than Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of what we have. When we get that kind of tribal, you know, then we have seriously lost our way. All right. Because, you know, my granddad fought the Nazis. I grew up, you know, pretending like I was fighting the Russians, you know, like the Russians were going to parachute in every second, things like that. This isn't who we are. And now we're acting like they're our friends when they don't have any special affinity for us. You know, they'd take us out tomorrow if they could. So why all of a sudden is a hostile foreign power better than my patriotic opposition? I mean, imagine that. That's how far we've gone. And we got to bring it back.
No, I ask that question all the time. And again, it's being saturated morning to night with you know, Fox News and all of the right wing blather and all of that. In fact, last week we talked to a guy, David Wiseman, who was saying, look, I was on that Trump train. I was one of the leaders of the Trump train. And, you know, he had this moment where, you know, he's arguing with Sarah Silverman and, you know, they're going back and forth. And he started to actually do some research. And found out she wasn't crazy.
Right. And there's been, you know, I mean, it just the idea of, and that's why one thing I love about being out knocking on doors, which, you know, is about 90% of running a campaign like mine, is when you knock on someone's door, you can have this conversation and you can have it civilly. And I was speaking to a gentleman just the other day who opposed me on most of my views. But I was able to talk to that person and say, you know what, if you and I were in office with our opposing views, you know, my favorite person in the world is a really smart person who disagrees with me. So when we have a situation where we disagree, but we can come to an accommodation, that's probably the best of all possible worlds.
Absolutely. I'm right there. Absolutely. And this is where we're going to have to leave it. Brett, I appreciate the time. I wish you the best. I hope people will check out your website, brettpransky.com. Good stuff, man. Thanks so much, Brett. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show.